Hi there, g'day. This is Dave McCocken coming to you from sunny Bangkok. I'm with my partner in crime, Kevin Gray, who's up in Tokyo, and we're welcoming you back to MR Realities. This is the second installment of what we hope will be a bi-weekly series of interviews and panel discussions where we drill a special guest each time on topics of interest to market researchers around the world and try to find out a bit more about the things that people should know and why perhaps they're not using them correctly. We'll be in touch with lots of details in the future, but for now, here's Kevin to introduce today's speaker.
Okay, I'm Kevin Gray, and our speaker today is Eric King, and the theme for today's discussion is data science, uses, excuses, and abuses. Eric is president and founder of the Modeling Agency, an analytics training and consulting company with his primary office in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's a graduate of the University of Pittsburgh's computer science program and a former U.S. Army officer. The Modeling Agency was launched in 2000 and offers vendor-neutral training, consulting, strategic mentorship, practice leadership, and implementation oversight in predictive modeling. Eric is a true expert in this space, not a professional hypester, and this promises to be a very stimulating and educational discussion. I very much look forward to it. I know Dave does too. Thanks so much for joining us, Eric.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Kevin and Dave. I think we're going to have some real fun on this one, perhaps at the expense of a few, but I believe only the ones who capitalize on hype. So obviously, I'm excited to be here.
Well, speaking of hype, we hear so much about data science. What exactly is it?
Well, to me, it's broader than just analytics. I believe it involves all things data, but it's a more technical label for what we previously called business intelligence. If you take the science moniker seriously, I feel that this more technical label is actually kind of unfortunate because, in my experience, the focus needs to be more toward applying sound strategy. We can get into that a little bit later in the interview, but to me, data science is a bigger camp than just analytics alone. So, it involves the later practice of big data, and of course, that's another area that we can discuss tamping hype down about. But to me, data science again, it really involves anything that relates to data acquisition, pulling the data together, preparing it, transporting it, analyzing it, and delivering it for ultimate consumption.
Okay, so the sort of person you've described here is not really one person, but it sounds like a team of people. There's no one that could really have all those skills, really, as far as I can tell.
No, I would say that when it comes to a data scientist, I would say that there's two types. There's what I would say, it's almost like the medical field where there can be generalists and specialists, and only unicorns, at least in data science, can be both. I'd argue a special case in predictive analytics alone where there are actually a few unicorns, but in data science, no such thing. If you're looking for a data scientist, you want to determine whether they are a specialist or a generalist. If they are a specialist, what is their specialty? Because you really can't have exceptional talents in more than a few areas. Otherwise, you're a generalist. And there was a phenomenal quote by John Wills on Twitter, who gave his definition of a data scientist, and this falls into the generalist camp. He said that a data scientist is a person who's better at statistics than a software engineer, and better at software engineering than any statistician. So I thought that was pretty interesting as far as a definition of a data scientist. But I'll tell you, most organizations, they're not aware of really what a data scientist is, who they should be hiring, what role that they should be putting that data scientist into. And so what I see happening a lot is organizations hiring a deep bench of data scientists, expecting better results. I don't want to belabor this too much, but if they have this vertical stack of data scientists, then essentially they've got a whole bunch of mechanics working under the hood, making that engine run better and faster. But nobody is really taking charge of the wheel or understand the rules of the race. And at the end of the day, they're capable of driving off course more quickly. You know, they have that faster engine, but they never understood the rules of the game. So they, like I say, they end up driving off course at a higher rate of speed.
As a marketing researcher, I run into something like that a lot, in which you have, on the client side, very extensive R&D teams stacked with people with very impressive credentials, who never think about the consumer, or not very much, or not in the same way that consumers think about themselves. And they're very focused on, you know, designing the products, something that impresses them, something that they find challenging and intellectually stimulating. But then often when it's put on the market or tested, the consumer is really, it's either a yawn or a thumbs down. So I kind of, that very much rings a bell. And of course, as an analytics person, I run into that in marketing science a lot, where you have people who are quite technically good, but can't see the broader picture.
Yeah, this is sort of interesting, because just the way Kevin used some terminology there sort of feeds into a little hobby horse of mine, which is that too much market research, traditional market research, is focused on what is loosely termed consumers, and too little of it is focused on people. And so quite often I find that when clients, when marketers are developing ideas, they're doing it within a very narrow set of data that's looking at the actual consumption habit of a particular category or product by a particular group of people, but they don't actually consider what else those people are doing in life and how that particular category may be playing, as it probably is, you know, less than 1% of their lives. And so how do data scientists overcome that? How do data scientists help us understand where what we're looking at in terms of consumption behaviors, et cetera, might fit in within the broader context?
Yeah, that's a good thing. Now, a good point, Dave. In your line of work, Eric, you're working with more than marketing people. You're working in, could you give us some examples, supply chain, other areas in business?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we have more of a horizontal niche, so it does apply across industries. So anywhere that our clients are overwhelmed with data and starved for valuable information from it. You can pretty much talk about any vertical market, whether it's in the medical field or CRM analytics is one of the more active, but it can be in manufacturing and process control, fraud detection. We do a lot of work for the public sector. So it's easy for us to adapt to any of these, because actually the vertical market veneer is very thin. And we simply need to be good enough to speak effectively with the players in the organization, but we need not be, and we should not be, actually, the subject matter experts. We have to involve the organization's subject matter experts at the right times, typically at the tails of the process. That involves, understanding how to structure the questions and align the supporting data, getting more information about what that data means. You don't want to just, eliminate outliers, even extreme outliers. Sometimes those are the points of greatest interest. And so we utilize them to really orient the modeling process in the right way. But once we do that, we don't want to have their experience to bias the model. That's what can happen sometimes when you include a subject matter expert at the wrong time.
Are you saying there are politics involved here? I can't believe this. This is data.
Could you believe
calculus.
That? Well,
there's no politics in calculus, right?
there was a Roman poet named Horace who said, "One wanders to the left and another to the right. Both are equally in error, but seduced by different delusions." So SMEs are often a little too close to the problem when it comes to developing what could be an otherwise very objective model.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of pretty ubiquitous in marketing research in the business world, and in a course in politics as well. Just to step back very, very quickly, you've given us a pretty comprehensive overview already of the sort of people involved in data science and the sort of things that they're doing. Now, just based on your experience, I'm sure you don't know you or no one else has an exact number, but what percentage of what is called data science in your experience actually pertains to marketing, and what pertains to other things?
Sure. Well, I'll just take a rough shot at this based upon the mix that comes to our public courses. And I would say that the large majority, or the largest slice of the pie that comes to our public courses have a marketing interest. And if you think of it, even if we work with organizations across industries, all of those organizations, or the vast majority of them, have customers. So even if they work in manufacturing, and this is actually true with a manufacturer who we're actively working with, we are looking at analytics that involve their manufacturing process, and at the same time working with the other side of the house within the same organization with their marketing analytics. So I would venture to say between 30% and 40% have a marketing analytics interest, and all of the others combined would be perhaps 10% each and on down.
I see. Okay, that's interesting. So do you see that the marketing analytics is then getting better integrated with other sorts of analytics within companies, at least the ones that you're working with? Or is that, we still have a long way
yes.
to go?
Well, both. It's on its way, and we're trying to encourage that more. As a matter of fact, Kevin, you're certainly familiar with the cross-industry standard process for data mining, right,
mm-hmm.
Given your background? And we're huge fans of it, but over the years, as you're probably aware, it hadn't been upgraded or updated since 2001. And we continue to use it, and it's a phenomenal process model. But the places where we felt that we had outgrown it to a good extent wasn't so much because of recent influences of big data and data velocity and variety and the like. Yes, those are some issues that caused it to degrade a little bit. But the bigger issues are more those at the enterprise level. Many of those involve organizational culture, mind shift change, and the like. But the other is looking more across departments. And you might be surprised at data stores that are available across departments, from CRM to the other functional areas, that if they had a greater appreciation of the environments involved, the data that's available both internally and externally, intra-departmental, there's a lot more opportunity. You don't necessarily use all of those resources, but they should be considered in a broader assessment. And when that broader assessment's achieved, you have a lot a greater capability and opportunity to look at with your analytics.
So there's still plenty. Sorry, Dave, I'll let you butt in just a sec here. Just a quick follow-up. You have a lot of silos still, but then the silos are breaking down a bit, and there's a recognition that perhaps that they really have to be done away with?
Well, not necessarily, because we don't work so much upstream to break down silos, but we do want to look at the silos. What do they contain? And if they have information that may be of interest, what we would recommend is building an analytics sandbox. And we can pull the components from those silos into that sandbox from which we would do the analytic work. But we certainly want to do the reconnaissance to determine what resources are available, what is their value. From that and from the analytic effort, our findings can then motivate, perhaps breaking down those silos if it makes sense. And that's more work upstream from what we do. But at the end of the day, we certainly want to be looking further downstream to say you've spent all these resources to collect all this data, to store it, to cleanse it, And to what end if you don't ultimately understand how it's going to be applied, how you're going to find value from it, how you're going to get leadership to adopt it, and at the end of the day, make sure that it's purposeful and measurable and accountable, and that the results, the impact is residual. That's where our focus is. Once you have that, then you might be surprised at how there's the motivation for more adjustments upstream to get around any silos that might be inhibiting folks from looking across those resources.
So, Eric, offline we started to talk about this, I guess, and my experience the last couple of years working with a couple of relatively large companies out here in Asia is that they've invested a lot of money in analytics departments or market science departments, different names, but usually the same purpose. But quite often, to your point, while everybody in the organization may be aware of of that particular unit within the organization, they may actually be aware of what its role has been said it would be, but they're finding it extremely hard to actually interact with it because they're not understanding how they actually use the output. As you say, it's upstream maybe from what you do to organize that, but what's a good example or a good examples of the way in which you've seen companies actually overcome that?
Well, what we propose to them, and oftentimes they don't come to us asking for this. They either learn it through our strategic training courses. We have both tactical and strategic courses, but from the strategic, they can then appreciate the benefits of a much more comprehensive, what we call an enterprise level assessment. And that's not just where we're looking at the data resources, but we're making sure that we involve anybody that either contributes to or benefits from the analytic function. That means the analytic practitioners, the functional department leaders, the users or those who are going to make this operational, leadership and even stakeholders. And from that, we get to see where the motivations are, where the capabilities are, where the limitations are, and where the politics are. Is there a black knight in the group? And as an external consultant, we can actually raise that and show where, the more global opportunities are. And that's what allows us this higher level view to understand where the greater opportunities are across departments. And then we get to understand which projects are truly viable. There's often many strategic pitfalls that can be raised, but then we want to find which potential opportunities are truly viable, that come into this intersection of many disqualifiers and survive it. And then of those that are truly viable, let's rank them for greatest potential impact and lowest risk, and that's where we can begin. And that's the benefit of that larger, broader exercise. But when we get back to the label of a data scientist, if we're so many people are talking about the data scientist, and I continue to be shocked by the fact that nobody's really asking who's the team lead, the analytic lead. And I think part of the reason is because people don't know there's a difference. I see a lot of people, matter of fact, I've known a number of analytic leads who don the data science the data scientist title, and I think, why would you pigeonhole yourself into a title that seems to really be more of a tactical practitioner? If you take the science part of that name seriously, and maybe I'm too traditional, but I do. If you're going to put scientist in your title, I think that you run by formal process, by testing, by peer review, by the scientific method, and it's not the natural, skill or trait of a data scientist to necessarily have the soft skills and the business acumen to look at problems strategically. I better pause there because I can go into a half hour diatribe on that, but I'll weave that into to the remaining questions that you have.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid area, and I just want to... Given that discussion, I just want to get your opinion on what I found equally strange is a number of organizations that I've been exposed to in one way or another the last couple of years, where they have an analytics division. In some cases, it's called the data science division. And it's very loose as to what the difference may be. And, you know, it seems to be whoever decides one name is cooler than the other for different reasons. But then what's interesting is that the organizations will then have a totally separate market research division with a totally separate reporting line through to some very senior executive, which strikes me as a little bit strange because, and I just want to get your feedback on that. I mean, it seems to me like you're doing two different lots of investigation work that may or may not coalesce, unless there's somebody basically at the CEO level in one particular organization that decides to get these two people in the room together. And he quite often doesn't. He listens to them separately. Now, is that normal, do you think, or is that something that should be normal, should be different? I'd just like to get your opinion on that.
Right. Yeah. I don't have a problem with them being separate. There may be functional reasons why perhaps they should be. But if they are going to be separate, there should be some coordinated, purposeful collaboration. As external consultants, you know, we make those recommendations and those organizations that will allow us to continue with them to oversee their implementation, you know, we see tremendous progress toward that. But some of our assessments have come out to reveal that there is too much distance between the departments. There doesn't seem to be cooperation or collaboration between them. And you're right. A lot of the time it comes down to those divisional leaders that just either aren't willing to cooperate much, either they're competitive in some way, even though it's internal, or they don't have a good enough understanding or appreciation of the other's function, and perhaps there's even an intimidation factor. But those are organizational cultural issues that need to be addressed. And when it comes to analytics, I just don't see that there's enough talent out there at the analytic leadership level to be able to ask the kinds of questions and assess what needs to be assessed in order to make the kinds of recommendations and project definitions to be able to address those shortcomings.
And that's the way Dave's comment very, very much dovetails with my own observations. Very often you have, for example, marketing researchers, at least on the agency side outside, have traditionally sort of, you know, if they thought about CRM at all, they thought it's something different. It's never been, you know, considered to be part of marketing research or by many people at least. And there's sort of the separate, well, yeah, sure, companies, they do their own, you know, stuff, their own analytics internally, but that doesn't really pertain to us. So there's sort of a strange division of labor here. That it, at least, you know, on paper doesn't always seem to make sense. But I think your point about the lack of leadership, I think, you know, developing the technical skills you need in various areas, even in one, often is a challenge enough. But then having the management skills and the experience, the years of experience working within companies and perhaps more than one industry, to be able to exercise and to implement and to take advantage of your skills is not easy. So there's a real shortage. It must drive you nuts as well too. You see, in various discussions and blogs and all that, the focus is almost entirely, I think, like Hadoop and Apache Spark and
yeah.
I mean, that's in the current neural networks. Well, that's cool, but you know, what do you do? That's important, but. There's something missing, as you've been pointing out very eloquently.
Well, absolutely, and that's where, you know, I see all these marketing research reports or industry research rather that talk about how there's going to be such a shortage of data scientists, and if they are talking about the analytic practitioners, those who are technically astute at machine learning and advanced statistics and mathematics to be able to actually build those predictive models, I don't see that, at least not in the the short term, there's plenty of analytic practitioners. There's many more that are going into the data science programs at the universities. Where there's going to be a tremendous strain is for the more seasoned, strategically oriented analytic lead that again has this the rare soft skills that are required to do all the you know pulling together all of the roles and to be able to do that more comprehensive assessment to ensure that the analytic practice will be formed in a way that is going to allow us to arrive at tangible, productive, impactful, and residual results. That's where the strain is going to be, and even for medium-sized businesses, that's not the first person you should hire either. I think that's a role that should be outsourced for some while until you get the practice to a certain point and can be able to take off from there. Otherwise, that rare role, first of all, is going to be very difficult to hire. But secondly, if you bring them on prematurely, they're going to end up doing tactical work because there's just not quite enough full-time effort to be done at the leadership level, and then they get run down into into the lower level things that don't really inspire them. So you're right. I mean, there's many roles that need to be considered and fulfilled to have a thriving analytic practice, and you know, analytic lead and in my view, data scientist are not one and the same. They're really different roles. And most organizations don't understand that. So what they end up doing is more analytics just for the sake of analytics, and data scientists come up with some interesting insights that at the end of the day don't align with organizational objectives. And you probably know this, a technology looking for a home typically at the end of the day doesn't end up being adopted or getting a lot of recognition. It gets an attaboy, but that's about where it ends.
Yeah, and then people at the senior level will say, well, we're spending all this money on data science and analytics and IT and all this, and where's the payoff? And it's kind of, it can be very frustrating because sometimes the payoff or lack of payoff is because the results are being ignored, you know? Because it's not, the fault can be on both sides, right? The people, the data scientists are not communicating correctly, and then the people on the top are not listening, right?
Well, that's true, and you know, I don't put either one of them to be fully accountable. I really think it's the analytic lead role that needs to be the one that pulls those ends together, because there's a tremendous amount of dysfunction between them, and it's the analytic lead that needs to fill that void. Otherwise, the data scientists are busy building a phenomenally sophisticated rocket, and they build it well, and not necessarily because they have all the talent to be able to build a great sophisticated rocket, but modern software it does a great job of encapsulating a lot of that mathematical complexity, and a general business practitioner can build a more than adequate model, not necessarily an optimized one, but a more than adequate for business purposes. And so they come up with this tremendous rocket to find out that nobody had talked about a mission plan. And the data scientist thinks that their job is done when they built the rocket. And look at how great this thing is. And look at all the pounds of thrust. And it works well. But if we haven't discussed the environment, which it's...
Headed to Mars, Jupiter.
Even beyond that. Yeah, well, and what are we supposed to bring back? What's the mission to do? What is leadership's definition of what is a completed mission? That's the one part of it. The other part of it is, have we even considered what the environment is out there? And, you know, that's the other part of it with analytics. So many people talk about real-time analytics, and there are some legitimate applications for it, but the vast majority of the time, it's unnecessary. And And so in the cases where it is necessary, have we looked at data velocities and the algorithms that can apply toward what's required to keep up with real-time analytic feeds, and where does it need to be written and applied and the rest of it? So again, you know, that analytic lead is the key person that needs to bring the future into the present, look downstream, defuse bombs upstream before we ever get there, and take that greater holistic view of what's required in an organization to make analytics successful, and start to build that predictive modeling factory. Let's not just get a single win here, but let's map out what will be required to stand up an ongoing analytic practice. I don't feel that any organization over $50 million in revenue should be outsourcing analytics. Again, the mathematics are handled by modern software. Most business practitioners can be given the roadmap from an analytic lead once it's understood which projects are important and how to create a good project definition. Those common business practitioners can be trained how to run the rest of the analytic process and arrive at results that that are going to again be measurable and impactful and impress leadership, because we did the homework in advance to understand what is going to impress them and make sense to them. How can we wrap up results in ways that will be consumable to leadership?
So once you have the analytics process set up, then really that's the hard part. And then after that, to some degree, it can be systematized or automated.
Yes, and automated to a large degree, but with a common business practitioner, they can be trained to run, you're right, the remainder of the process from data preparation, because there's a lot of nuances that go into how you prepare data, but they can be roadmapped onto the modeling is actually the most straightforward part with modern software. Validation, a little bit trickier. That actually involves a bit more strategy, because we're not just looking at R squared or model accuracy, because that doesn't always match up with business objectives. We need to validate the model to make sure that upon deployment it's going to hold up, and that that we're really meeting the business objectives with the model, and then going on toward true deployment and model lifecycle maintenance and monitoring. Those can all be trained and maintained by existing staff.
Now, how is the Internet of Things going to potentially impact on all of this? Do you see much of a place for that, much of an impact in the near term?
I think I missed the most important key word there. Was it iterative?
No, sorry, the Internet of Things, IoT.
Oh, IoT.
Good old IoT.
Okay, got it.
That's right. another buzzword nowadays.
Buzz, right. Yeah. Okay, my view of IoT, just like big data, it is real. It has its application. It is helpful, but certainly it's not the end-all be-all that all the buzz is making it out to be. So, you know, analysts always welcome more attributes, and the Internet of Things will bring more dimensions to the analytics, and the analytics can decide which of those have true predictive value. But here's the rub, and this comes back to really the theme of this podcast. Until you know what actions you really want to take from the new data that's available through the Internet of Things and the objectives that are meaningful to the organization to affect, indeed, it's just more hype. And that's what I've seen with IoT so far. Yes, we're excited that we can connect devices to the Internet and have this highly accessible flow of new data, but nobody's really asking, what do we want to do with it? Now, most of these devices give off data, but they're not designed to receive or take commands from. Now, that doesn't mean that the devices that generate the data have to be the ones to make use of it. But even with that, you know, there's not that many instances where I've seen IoT-generated data really used to productive effect. I think it will be, and again, it's helpful, but it just doesn't measure up to the buzz. It's another repository of data, and a lot of it is generated in real time and the like. But it, you know, it's more dimensions, and we're always excited about more dimensions. We're just not, more excited about IoT-generated data than any others that are available.
So we have the cart before the horse in many cases.
Well, we have more horses, and we're just we're not so excited because we've got a couple of more horses. They're not better than the other ones that we have. And hey, we welcome additional horsepower, but they're just the new horses. I think the buzz is around the recency effect and the fact that it's cool how that data is accessible.
Hello. Oh dear.
Oh, well, we've just lost somebody to IoT, as obviously somebody in the IoT world got offended. There you go. Well, with that, Kevin, I think it's probably a good point if we've lost Eric now.
are you back, Eric? Are you there, Eric?
I'm still connected.
Okay.
Good. I am.
That's strange.
You just blanked out for a bit. That's okay.
Yeah, well, maybe that's... a higher power is listening to us and telling us to better wrap things up here. Dave, I've been talking too much and interrupting.
Let me finish with two quick questions then, Kevin, before we go. Sure. Obviously, both Kevin, but especially I, have spent 20 years out here in Asia working primarily with either Asian companies or the Asian divisions of international companies. And I'm just wondering if you... in your work, have seen any real difference in the acceptance and usage of this whole data science area in Asia versus the US? Is there anything?
Well, we've had a number. Our training courses are not online yet, and we've had a number of organizations send their delegates to our courses here in the US. I can't imagine what it'll be like when we finally get our courses online. They will be live. They'll be very interactive and engaging. I would think at that point we're going to see really where the true interest lies. But I think it must be pretty high if there's a number of organizations from Pacific Rim that fly their delegates to our courses here in the U.S.
Well, good to hear. There are a number of organizations doing a lot of work with it out here. I know some of the big ad agencies are investing a lot of money in data science units to help clients. I know, as I said, a number of clients that are doing a lot of work in pumping it up and hiring people. Maybe not always yet clear on how they're going to use it, as we've discussed. But I'm very interested, and I'll be interested to see as things go on. And maybe we'll get back to after you've got your stuff up online, you've had some experience with that, and maybe we can discuss this a bit more.
I think we'll have a lot more data points at that time.
That would be great. I'm finishing all of my discussions and all the interviews I'm doing, whether they are with experts like yourself or whether they're actually client projects. I always finish up everything now with a standard question that somebody opened my eyes to a couple of years ago. Which was, when you think about market research, what's the one question that you haven't seen that you always wish market research had asked?
Uh-huh. Well, Dave, I'm always hungry for questions that certainly cast doubt on industry hype and target impactful incomes. I'm not a market researcher, so if you'd allow me to cast that one in predictive analytics terms. So I'll tell you one question I'm never asked, but I certainly wish had been, is something to the effect of, we have too much year-end funding. Could you possibly teach a one-day course on-site for $500,000? I'd very much like that question to be asked. Seriously, something along the lines of, we no longer want to keep doing analytics just for the sake of analytics. Where is truly the right way and place to start building a highly effective internal predictive modeling practice? That's the right kind of question to be asking. And what they should recognize, you know, if there were an answer to that, is not starting with data and software. You've got to start with a more comprehensive assessment to be successful. So that's the question I want to be asked is, how do we stop doing analytics for the sake of analytics? Where's the best and right way to get started for highly effective analytics? That's the question I'm yearning to be asked.
Well, good answers. Let me just tell you that with your first answer, having been in a situation where I can think of two occasions where somebody ran me on something like the 28th of December and literally said, yeah, hey, I've got $50,000 left in my research budget, have to spend it by the end of the year. Could we set up and do a quant study in the next 24 hours? So there is hope for you there. And the second answer, I think, is the important. That's the crux of it. You know, I think it doesn't matter whether we're talking about data science, IoT, all the subjects we've discussed in the last three quarters of an hour. The reality of it is that the inclination, of course, always is to say, well, this is the big thing. We better be in it without actually thinking through what we're going to do with it and how we're going to manage it and what difference will make to our organization. So I suggest that, you know, the one thing I've got out of this discussion, Eric, and thank you very much for it, was, you know, the strategic thinking through of the role of data science in your organization and how to manage it, and then the correct leadership to make it work in the long term is probably more important than the actual implementation of it, you know, and I really appreciate that point being made.
It is, and I know we're probably running over a little bit, but one thing I'd like to underscore is that I think to a lot of practitioners and perhaps market researchers, they're probably hearing that and thinking, well, of course you've got to, you know, have an analytic goal, and you've got to understand where it's going to work, and a lot of those strategic considerations, and yet, those questions seem trite to them, and yet we rarely find that anybody actually does. And they jump directly into the data and the software. And again, they come up with those interesting insights that at the end of the day, they don't end up being adopted or as impressive as they are, they don't catch the attention of leadership, or they're not translated in terms that they can really appreciate and understand. So, late Tony Rathburn, he was one of our leading senior consultants who just passed away last November. He had a famous saying that no one gets a raise, bonus, or promotion based upon R-squared, model lift, technical accuracy, or any other artificial metric. Always focus on your performance metrics. And if you're not familiar with the Dan Ierley quotation, he's from Duke University. Did you heard the big data is like teenage sex, I hope?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. That's you have heard that one. Okay.
Everyone does it, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, exactly. Right.
That sort of pattern, you know, thing you mentioned, we're going to have to wrap up here just real quick, but, you know, I run into that all the time, and obviously Dave does as well, too, and you do, where people understand the words, but they don't really get the concept. Okay, it's really okay, sure, we need leadership, but really knowing how to become a leader or even how to spot someone with leadership ability, to hire them, to groom them, to train them, to retain them, that's a lot harder than the words. The words are easy, but actually understanding the concept and being able to implement it is the hard part.
And the coordination of all the parts and all the characters. There's a huge human element in this, and a lot of different roles, a lot of different personalities and talents, and to orchestrate them all to arrive at a functional analytic practice. No small effort. Great capper, Kevin.
Yeah, I tell you, this has been an education. Thanks so much, Eric, and thank you, Dave. Sorry for cutting you off a couple times there. A little bit of a lag here with the connection, but
we're all good. And looking forward to the next one. Thanks again, Eric. And I guess the next of our podcasts will be in about 2 weeks' time. Look forward to it. Cheers.
Okay. Thanks all. Bye.
My pleasure. Bye bye.